Stay on this committee.
Hey!
We're going to open the meeting on the Senate Committee on Rural Communities and Economic Development on this May 30th. It is the last committee meeting scheduled for our committee this session, and I will talk a little more about that as we get closer to the day. With that, we're going to go in a little different order than it's on the schedule, and I want people to know that. So we're going to start out with Senate Bill 3479A. Then we're going to go to Senate Bill 2345A. House bills, I'm sorry. I just keep forgetting. And then we're going to go to House Bill 2746A and then House Bill 2233A. They are all just work sessions, so they shouldn't take too long, but we are going to have explanations. And so with that, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3479A. And I'll have Mr. Honeycutt come up, and we'll go through real quickly the amendments. Do you want to explain, or do you want to let David do that? We'll let Dave explain that. The amendments that I asked him if he would work on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here in support of House Bill 3479 and the -A6 amendments. This was the bill that the committee heard a couple of weeks ago with folks from the Dalles that deals with fees in lieu of a local improvement district assessment. After the hearing, the chair asked for amendments to be prepared, and so we've prepared those amendments. And what the amendments do, they're the A6 amendments. What the amendments do is that they narrow the scope of the bill to cities in Wasco County with a population in excess of 5,000. I checked on that and made sure that what we're dealing with in that section is the Dalles. And they deal with partitions, with property owners that are applying for partitions. And as the underlying bill did, the amendments would prohibit the City of the Dalles from charging a fee in lieu of a local improvement district or a prepayment against an assessment for a future local improvement district in those situations. When you've got a property owner seeking an application for a partition. With that, the other thing that the amendments do is they prohibit the city from requiring the property owner in a partition application from entering into a non-remonstrance agreement for the future formation of an LID. So with that, obviously, this narrows the bill significantly again, and we hope that you'll support these amendments.
Thank you very much. And I guess I would call Representative, even though we're a work session, Hoffman up and make sure that, or just a nod either way. I just want to, it was your bill. We're making some amendments. I just want to make sure that you're okay with those amendments and how we're moving, because this is your part of the world.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Probably best to get it on the record. John Huffman, State Rep for House District 59. And I appreciate the Chair working with Mr. Honeycutt on the amendment, and I'm good with it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Then I will entertain a motion from my Vice Chair with regard to the amendment.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the -6 amendments dated 5/24/13.
Senator Bettinger moves to adopt the -6 amendments dated 5/24/13. Is there any discussion?
In what bill?
Oh, that's right. Thank you. Into
3479.
House Bill 3479.
Oh, that one. Okay.
That's the one. Very good. As in 3479A. We cut that before, too. Thank you very much for that, Senator Brzezinski. Any discussion? Seeing none, any opposition to the amendment? It is adopted. Senator Bettinger.
Chair Roblin, I move the A engrossed version of House Bill 3479 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bettinger moves the A engrossed version of House Bill 3479 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I really commend you for working with the proponents on the amendment, and it vastly improves the bill. I still will be voting no on it, just out of philosophical reasons.
Okay. So with that, we might as well have, is there any other objection? Seeing none, it passes, making sure that we have a no vote from Senator. verdict. And with that, we will close the work session on House Bill 3479A. We have, oh, carrier. I'll carry the bill.
You can explain it.
I was going to give it to Huffman, but he doesn't get to go, he doesn't have speaking privileges yet, so we'll work on that one. We could do ferry, no, we won't do that. Next, we will open a work session on Senate Bill 2345A. And we can have, well, we have a short explanation. We'll have Senator Cruz come on up front.
And that would be House Bill.
House Bill 34. I just like Senate. I don't know why. That short move over across the hall. What can I say? There you go.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2345A has no revenue impact on the proposed Dash A6 amendment, and a fiscal statement has been issued for the proposed Dash A6 amendment. We've met several times on this particular bill. Originally, it was focused on the Oregon Innovation and Infrastructure Task Force and an associated report. We have kept those provisions of the bill in and have added with the proposed Dash A6 amendment. We continue to change the December 31st report date for that task force, but then we also added provisions regarding the financing of dredging activities. We also modified it and added activities funded by the Marine Navigation Improvement Fund and reprioritized assistance as follows: study and construction costs of maintenance projects related to existing federally authorized navigation improvement projects, followed by study and construction costs of navigation improvement projects that directly support or provide access to those federal projects, or and finally, construction costs for dredging new federal projects.
With that, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1, and also in this role, Chair of the Coastal Caucus. And before I start, I would point out to Senator Przanski that really all we need to do is get Senator Dingfelter here, and we can just roll right into Judish when this is done.
You'd appreciate that.
just a very brief history. Where we are going with this is when Congress eliminated earmarks, the money to keep our small ports on the Oregon coast dredged disappeared. And that was something that Congressman DeFazio had done for several years in earmarks, is allocate those resources. We realize that without the ability to keep those ports open, most of our coastal communities would die. And so we have been working all session long to try to come up with structure and funding to make this happen. We have worked well, both the House and the Senate, as well as the executive branch. The governor is fully supportive of our efforts on this, as is our congressional delegation. And actually, we are hoping at some point in time to hear from Senator Wyden that there may actually be some federal money that would pile onto this. We thought we had a pretty clear path, and then we ran into some technical issues as far as the law not allowing us to get access to the money we thought we could get access to. And so that's the purpose of this amendment. I will say that it took a whole lot of lawyers a whole long time to come up with this amendment. I also want to say that we are very careful that not to impede or supersede any of the activities in the Columbia River or any other of the dredging operations that are going on in the state. This is just to allow us basically to have access to money so that we can buy time from the Corps of Engineers to do the channel dredging. And we're doing it in this bill quite simply because Senate President didn't want us to do a brand new bill, so we found this vehicle. And this is a very technical amendment, but a very simple amendment, and this will allow us to go forward with a project that a great many of us have spent the last several months trying to put together. So I have people behind me that are a lot more technical on this than I am, if you want that, but I would suggest just adopt the amendment and pass the bill would be probably the smartest course. But I will answer any questions, okay, if there are any.
Any questions? I just have a short statement, too, and that is that, in effect, the executive branch has been negotiating now with the Corps of Engineers to put in place the second MOU that's actually been done on this with the Corps. The first one was in North Carolina.
North Carolina,
this will be the second one, where, because they didn't really have authorization to take money from the state to do this. They worked that out through a plan in North Carolina. And so we are the second state that is kind of coming up with a statewide MOU with the Corps so that we can actually have rent the use and pay for the costs for them to do that. The executive branch has been working diligently, and we look like we have letters moving up the chain of command in the Army Corps. We have other letters moving up to the chairs of the appropriate committees in Congress. We believe that we will get this done in a relatively short time and have the ability to do this. But so this is all part of that whole process.
I would also point out that we are approaching this in a different way in other aspects. For example, the ports, on the coast south of Coos Bay have formed an association. And so they will have the ability to prioritize the work in and of themselves. And so we're one of the things we're working towards with the Corps is one permit to cover all the ports, and then that prioritization can happen. So we're also attempting to do some administrative streamlining in this process as well. And it should also be noted that the northern ports are absolutely okay with us doing this because the south ports were a little ahead of them on forming this association. And this, once we have this in place, we can duplicate it in the north. And at the end of the day, everybody be happy. This is, by the way, this is a long-term commitment we are making to the process. It's not just a one-time fix because it has to happen on an annual basis. And I also want to say for the record that the environmental community as a group is fully supportive of our efforts.
So with that, Senator Boettcher.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the -6 amendments dated 5/28/13 to House Bill 2345.
Very good. Senator Boettcher moves to adopt the -A6 amendments dated 5/28/13 to House Bill 2345A. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Boettcher.
Chair Roblin, I move the A engrossed version of House Bill 2345 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Boettcher moves the A engrossed version of House Bill 2345 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will close the work session on 2345. We will open a work session on House Bill, and that was House Bill, and this is House Bill 2746A. So we're going to open a work session on 2746. Mr. Honeycutt, come on up again.
We got the USB. That's impressive.
We got everything?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt here in support of House Bill 2746 and the A19 amendments. It's been my experience, Mr. Chair, that normally when you get to the A19 amendments, that signifies that there's been some opposition and competing amendments to get you to the A19s. In this case, the A19s are the result of taking a complicated issue and making sure that it works properly, with the goal being that the current replacement dwelling statutes, which have been in place for, ever since I've been here and have worked just fine, continue to be allowed to work just fine, while at the same time we address the issue that was raised and brought forward by Representative Unger and his farmer constituents about the dilapidated dwellings and their ability to replace those. So the A19s reflect the final set of amendments, and we hope the committee will adopt these to House Bill 2746. What the amendments do, and I apologize for reading from the witness stand. I've never done that before either, but I'm going to do so in this case. We amended House Bill 2746 to address a problem created by the language of Section 2, Sub 2B, which currently requires a property owner to demonstrate that their dwelling is assessed as a dwelling and has been assessed for the past five tax years. There are two problems with this language. First, a dwelling that is less than 5 years old would not qualify to be replaced under this subsection, even if it had been taxed as a dwelling since it had first been occupied. Second, a dwelling that was destroyed or otherwise demolished by the owner for replacement or rebuilding during the five-year period wouldn't qualify to be replaced under this subsection, even if it would have been taxed as a dwelling during this five-year period, except for the fact that the value of the dwelling was eliminated because it was destroyed or demolished by the owner for replacement or rebuilding. So we made amendments to Section 2.2B, Sub 2B, to resolve this problem. For a dwelling that is more than 5 years old, the amendments allow the dwelling to satisfy this subsection if the dwelling is taxed as a dwelling for the past 5 years, or if the dwelling would have been taxed as a dwelling for the past 5 years but stopped being taxed as a dwelling because it was destroyed or demolished by the owner for replacement or rebuilding. For a dwelling that is less than 5 years old, the amendments allow the dwelling to satisfy this subsection if the dwelling has been taxed as a dwelling since it was first occupied, or if the dwelling would have been taxed as a dwelling since it was first occupied but stopped being taxed as a dwelling because it was destroyed or demolished by the owner for replacement or rebuilding. If a former dwelling has not been taxed as a dwelling during the last 5 years, it does not meet the criteria in Section 2, Sub 2B, and must meet the standards in Section 2, Sub 3. That's the first part of the A19 amendments. The second part of the amendments, starting on line 12 and running through line 6 of page 2 of the A19s, take us to bring this bill back to the current standard for replacement dwellings, which allow a deferred permit. A deferred permit lasts indefinitely, but can only be transferred to a spouse. The permit can only be transferred to a spouse or a relative of the or a child of the applicant. Excuse me. And this reintroduces the current concept, which allows for a normal replacement dwelling permit, which typically lasts 4 years and can be transferred by the permit holder to a subsequent purchaser, whether they're a spouse or a child or whether they're unrelated. So the trade-off is you either accept the normal permit with a limited amount of time for you to replace for the permit to be valid, but which allows a broad transfer, or you ask for the deferred permit, which allows you an unlimited time to replace the dwelling, but only allows the permit to be transferred to a spouse or a child of the applicant. That's the current law, and the second part of the A19s bring this back to that current standard. The last part of the amendments in the A19 that's on page 2 of the amendments, lines 7 through 11, slightly modify the definition of improperly removed. And replace a dilapidated dwelling, you have to demonstrate that the dwelling was improperly removed. This language requires that the dwelling or the former dwelling, what was the dwelling and now is something other than the dwelling, in order for it to be improperly removed, it either has to currently have taxable value in its present state, or it had to have taxable value when it was first removed from the tax roll or was destroyed by fire or other act of God. That's the A19s. Again, I apologize for having to go through all of these amendments. There was a substantial amount of work in getting this, what I think is correct, and I really thank Representative Unger and Chair Clem over on the House Land Use side for letting us work this bill.
Thank you. Senator Becker.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 19 amendment stated 5-30-13 to House Bill 2746.
Senator Berkshire moves to adopt the Dash A-19 amendment stated 5-30-13 to House Bill 2746. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, adopted. Senator Berkshire.
Chair Roblin, I move the A engrossed version of House Bill 2746 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Berkshire moves the A engrossed version of House Bill 2746 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, it is adopted. We need to appoint, who would like to carry, Senator Krasinski?
Sure, why not?
Thank you. I was getting nervous that I might have to do that one, so I appreciate that.
I know a representative I can talk to about taking care of considerations and everything else.
There you go. That's right. Thank you.
I'm not sure what committee he's on, but we'll see what he's got.
Thanks. So we're closed the work session on House Bill 2746A, and we will open a work session on 2233A. And we'll have a short explanation by our administrator and recognize that this is a bill we're going to move to rules because we're still working on some amendments. And we just got permission, so that was nice. So, Senator Berkshire. Oh, first, Raquel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2233A, the A engrossed version has no revenue impact and it has a minimal fiscal impact. We heard this bill back on April 30th and have continued to work on it. This is the bill that deals with abandoned and derelict vessels. If you'd like more of an explanation, I'm happy to give it, or if that's sufficient.
That should do it. So just so everybody knows which one it is. Senator Berkshire.
Chair Roblin, I move the A engrossed version of House Bill 2233 without recommendation to the floor and add a subsequent referral to the Committee on Rules.
Senator Berkshire moves the A engrossed version of House Bill 2233 without recommendation to the floor and add a subsequent referral to the Committee on Rules. Is there any question? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And since it's going to another committee, we don't even have to have a person to carry it. But I think at some point we're hoping you'll be carrying this, Senator Berkshire.
Well, I for the record, we have been working on this, and it was just a matter, we just ran out of time. I talked to Senator Farioli, and hopefully we'll be continuing working on this in rules.
Okay, thank you. And with that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2231A, 33A, and we will open an informational meeting with the Oregon State University Institute for Natural Resources, the Oregon Explore Program, and the Rural Communities Explore. So with that, we'll open our meeting, and we'll have you, all of you, come on up to the front here, and we'll get an extra chair. We'll have all four of you, which just makes it easier for everybody. And while they're coming up, I just want to say I had the opportunity to have a great meeting about this program a while, and I really felt that it was one that was important enough to have as part of our hearing so that we hear it and other people who are on the phone or other people watching on the internet understand the opportunities that are available to us and Oregonians around the state because of this program. And with that, we'll let you proceed however you want to proceed.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Chair and Committee, my name is Lisa Gaines, and I direct the Oregon State University Institute for Natural Resources. And I'd like to introduce my colleagues, and I really like my job for a number of reasons, not only the people I work with, but the mission of the Institute for Natural Resources and all of the work that we are currently doing. And I'm going to ask one question. Is it possible to get the...
Yeah, we'll get it going here.
...to display? 1 minute.
There we go. We'll even dim the lights for you.
Thank you.
It's like magic.
Just like
it's
magic.
Amazing.
So who I'm going to introduce, and I'll do our first presentation. Our presentation will take place in sort of three phases. Briefly, I will explain who the Institute for Natural Resources is. And then we will have Janine Salwasser, who is our Oregon Explorer Program Lead, talk about the Oregon Explorer Program, which is the Natural Resources Digital Library. And we wanted to reserve a lot of room to have our colleagues, Lena Ituk, who is a social demographer and part of the Rural Studies Program at Oregon State University and the OSU Extension, and Vince Adams, who is an Extension Educator, a Research Associate with Extension, as well as the Rural Studies Program, describe our Rural Communities Explorer Portal, a way of accessing information about communities throughout the state. And I think that will be of great value. They've been doing fantastic work. So the Institute for Natural Resources, we were put in place by the legislature in 2001 through the Sustainability Act. And why I like my job, I like our mission. Our mission is really to try to hook the resources of the Oregon University system, the research, the data, the information they have, to help add value and input into decision making. Over the course of the last couple of months, the Institute for Natural Resources board and our staff and stakeholders have helped us sort of reshape our mission and our goals. What do we want to be able to do? Primarily, we have three goals. One is to increase the ability of others, other decision makers, to be able to more effectively and efficiently roll out and do their environmental outcomes. And this we do through a number of ways, and I will explain that in a moment. We are also interested in seeing how can we better connect researchers to the Oregon University system, different opinions, the research they do, the research that's on the horizon, the issues and the state of knowledge. How can that inform not only current decisions, but potentially future decisions, planning, and management? And lastly, we have this great distinctive suite of products including the Oregon Explorer that we think provide access to this information and data. And like I said, our main mission is to provide access to integrated data and information for natural resources decision making and solving problems. We have a number of ways that we are looking at this and going about our work product, and that is we provide data and information, development, management, and access. We have information about vegetation, and threatened and endangered species, habitats, et cetera, throughout the state. We provide these in geospatially, through data sets themselves, through information documents, as well as tools to be able to integrate and look at this information. We have research practice where we try to get decision makers with researchers together to talk about an issue. What are the uncertainties around areas of natural resources? What do or don't we know about large landscapes? What do or don't we know about conservation? What do or don't we know about water quality? What might what we know influence particular use, etc. Lastly, we also work on research and project coordination. We do this on a couple of bases. We do this with the Oregon University system and our other colleagues throughout the universities in the U.S., where we help manage large interdisciplinary projects, making sure that the research that they do has impact for decision makers. We also help out with state agencies where we have convened and managed task force and led scientific panels to keep them moving with doing reviews about the state of the knowledge of work. And then lastly, we have a lot of university students, graduate students. Over the course of the last 5 years, we've had about 55 graduate students come in to be able to get applied and experiential knowledge to work on real-world applications and learning how to write policy and science briefs, learning how to do systematic reviews of the science. And with that, what I'd like to be able to do is be able to explain to you and let Janine explain our Oregon Explorer program, which is one of our highlighted tools that we provide access to the community to utilize.
Thank you. So I'm Janine, and I'm really pleased to be here. This Oregon Explorer program was actually developed in partnership with many state agencies, with our university partners. And so what we've got to date is we developed portals that are much like collections when you go to a library. And so these collections are organized around the types, like the newest portal is our Western Landscapes Explorer, and we've actually moved from just featuring Oregon to trying to align with all the Western states, because Institute for Natural Resources actually had a landscape project in four states, and we didn't have a mechanism to make that information accessible. Our data portals are developed in partnership with the Department of Administrative Services. And so we have both a way to access imagery and all of the spatial data developed by each of the state agencies, not just natural resources, but across the board. And so that's the framework data layers, if you've heard of those. The location portals we develop on a demand basis. So when there are local communities, actually, and the the most recent ones were the Deschutes Basin and the Lakes Basin, where the communities came to us and wanted access to that information that the university had and also what they had themselves. And so we would like to see, actually our future plans is to have a basin portal for every state. In fact, maybe you could help us think about how to reach your constituencies, especially in southern Oregon and the east side that we don't have. And then the topic portals, and you'll see the one that's highlighted, which you'll hear more about today, is the Rural Communities Explorer. But we've also worked with other agencies to develop the Hazards Explorer, the Land Use Explorer, and so the abilities to actually work with those agencies and expand that content. What we're trying to do now is figure out how to better integrate all of that information. Lisa mentioned that the emphasis on really a lot of issues are cross-cutting across these topics, across these places. And so how we do that is, you might think of a library. Well, it's not just documents. Libraries now are repositories of all kinds of data, imagery, stories. And so what we're doing is with this digital library, we have tools for visualizing data. We have the actual data through those data portals. And something that came out of actually when we developed the Willamette Basin Explorer, which was our very first portal, it was our partners that said, you know, why do people care about the data? We need to help them understand what these issues are in natural resources. So we actually have quite a collection of multimedia stories to help people understand, first, what are these issues and why should they care about the information? And then finally, just resources in terms of other ways to connect information, whether it's through people or other information systems, and just trying to be a repository, kind of a central point. And just to highlight some of the tools in terms of visualizing information, we have one of our most popular tools is the mapping tool. That enables you to create different overlays for different places all across Oregon and also in the West. We have the thematic mapping tools. So these were developed with those specific topic portals or place-based portals. So you'll see, like, for example, the Measure 37 and Measure 49 view, where people wanted to see where were those claims and what could have been the potential cumulative impact of having those land conversions. And so there was a tool developed with Department of Land Conservation Development. And then we have our reporting tools, which you'll actually see the community reporting tool from the Rural Communities Explorer. We've worked with the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board on a watershed reporting inventory tool. And then finally, the spatial data, so that people can actually get to the data, download it, and use it. So that's a very broad brush overview of this digital library. And now we're going to turn it over, and you'll get a sense of really what these portals provide from a user's perspective.
My name is Lena Atuk. Thank you very much for having us today. I'm a social demographer with Oregon State University Extension Service. I also am affiliated with the OSU Rural Studies Program. And to my far right is Vince Adams, who's the coordinator for the Rural Communities Explorer. I'm the director of the project. So today I'm going to talk to you a little bit about, more in depth, what the Explorer can do. So really, the Rural Communities Explorer is a website that provides demographic, social, economic, and environmental information to a host of key decision makers, be they state legislators, local government, so city or even county government, but also philanthropies, people in nonprofits, people in the small business sector, and then, of course, engaged residents, so people who are just actively working on working on community development or economic development in their communities. The Rural Communities Explorer is a partnership endeavor. You've already learned about the Oregon Explorer. They provide the key hosting service for our website. But the OSU Extension Service and the Rural Studies Program faculty provide the content expertise. We also do all of the outreach and training for this project. We do in-person trainings in communities like Florence, Port Orford, Coos Bay, Lapine, Baker City, you name it, we've been there and are willing to go there to train people to help them understand how to use data to make decisions and how they can access it through the Rural Communities Explorer. By and large, the RCE, as we refer to it, has been funded by the Ford Family Foundation based out of Roseburg, Oregon. But we are actively pursuing alternative or additional funding sources and are working with the Oregon Community Foundation on enhancing some of our tools. So this is what the front page looks like, and if you go to the URL, this is what you'll see. And we provide access to two basic types of information. One is foundational information. And so this is information that helps people make sense of the data that they see when they use the Community Reporter tool. It includes all sorts of information about how we define community, how people can think about rural. As you well know, there are multiple definitions of rural, and so it's important for us all to get on the same page about what we're talking about. And so there's resources there to help people understand those concepts, as well as a glossary. And then there are key issue briefs written about rural topics, about 19 rural issue briefs on the site that, again, provide people deeper understanding of issues like rural migration, rural population change, rural economic development, et cetera. So these are really key pieces to help people think about how they can make changes in their community. As with all the Oregon Explorer sites, the RCE also has access points to reports and publications that are written by OSU faculty and students, but also maybe community-driven, so maybe community reports that have been generated at that local level. And then finally, particularly relevant to this group, there's a whole discussion about this concept of community vitality and ways that we can be thinking about community vitality in our rural communities. So the most popular part of our site is the community data piece, and so I'm going to walk you through how you can access community data. So from the front page, you can click on either one of these two spots, clicking on the map of Lakeview or accessing community data. And once you click on that, you'll be directed to a page that looks like this. And just to orient you a little bit, as you're walking through the reporter tool, just note that you can always get help with how-to instructions, and then also if you have any questions, they might be posed in the frequently asked questions or FAQ section, so you click on the tabs right there. But from this page, from this front page, the most important thing that we need to do is actually start generating a report. So at this point, you need to type in a community name or select your community from the map. Now, to select your community from the map, all you need to do is click the little icon on the upper right-hand corner of the map and then start clicking in the map. Alternatively, you can just type in your community name. So we have all sorts of communities. Oh, thank you very much. Communities that you can generate reports for. You can generate a report for county. You can generate reports for cities, large and small, so as large as Portland or as small as Arago. You can also generate, as small as ALSI. And you can also generate reports for unincorporated communities. So these are communities that obviously do not have a municipal government, and we all know exist, but other state agencies or other federal agencies don't recognize these places as existing. And what we've done is we've allocated all these unincorporated towns to sub-county or census tract areas so we can actually extract out the larger cities when we're looking at much of these data. This is really the value added of the RCE. We're the only tool that does that for folks. So after you type in your community name or select it from the map, it gets dumped into your report queue. And once you have those communities in there, then you just need to make a decision about whether you want to compare those communities. So here we have Coos Bay, Arago, which is an unincorporated place, and Coos County, so we want to compare. Or if we had maybe a bunch of counties and we wanted to look at a region of counties, perhaps Eastern Oregon versus Western Oregon or South Coast versus another part, we can generate a regional report. So you have to combine, you can choose to combine those geographies. So once you've decided how you want to combine or compare your communities, then in that final step, just click View Your Report. So really, in those two simple steps, you can get to your report, which looks like this. So on the left here, we've got 17 clusters of data. And so we basically organized all the variables or all the attributes or all the characteristics into sort of larger headings, like population, education, income, employment, labor market, housing, food system, et cetera. Once you click on the cluster, then you can actually see all the data associated with that cluster, so on the right-hand side here. So this is an example looking at Coos Bay. We're told not only that we're looking at Coos Bay, but we're also informed, yes, Coos Bay is an incorporated city. If you were looking at an unincorporated community like Arago, you would be told it's in census tract XYZ in Coos County. Also note that we're always going to look at 2 years of data from the start. You're always going to get the earliest year of data for which we have available, which is 1990, and the most recent year of data available. I'm going to draw your attention to a couple of things here. the total population count. So we have variables that are reliant on decennial census data, so count data, so full enumeration of the population. And then we also have data that are based on estimates that come from the Census Bureau from the American Community Survey. And so it's important to draw that distinction because sometimes there are variables that are just based on counts and some based on estimates. And when we look at Coos Bay, we can actually see that the value in 1990 of the total population based on the decennial census was about 15,000 folks, and that in the 2006 to 2010 year range that the American Community Survey corresponds to, the average population in between 2006 and 2010 was about 16,000 people, plus or minus 24. With the ACS, the American Community Survey, we actually have better understanding from the Census Bureau about the sort of margin of error or the error associated with any of the any of the numbers that they give us, and so those are posted there as well, so you have a good sense of how accurate the estimate is. So we're going to look at this. This is an education cluster. And I just want to point out that as much as we can, we provide specific community-level data. We pull data from over 30 sources. The American Community Survey and the Census are only two of those 30 sources. Unfortunately, other agencies don't provide data at that community-specific level. All we do is all we can do is get at the county level. So in those instances, this is how we display it. So pay attention. So note that there are certain data that only have county-level data associated with them. Also, if you want to understand how we define any of the variables, you can just click on the details underneath the variable names. In order to change the years for which you're looking at the data, you click on Change Report Years, and you can modify up to 1990 to 2010, and we're about to publish our 2007 to 2011 data shortly. You can also view the data for all years by clicking on this chart icon. So here we're going to look at educational attainment, so the percentage of adults with a four-year degree or greater in Oregon, which is in the orange, Coos Bay, which is in the green, Coos County, which is in the red, and Arago, the unincorporated community, in blue. And so as you can see here, this chart really drives home the point of why it's so important to allocate these unincorporated communities to census tracts or sub-county geographies. So as you can see, overall, this chart is telling us that in Coos County, educational attainment is lower than in Oregon at large. But when we look at the variation between Coos Bay, Coos County, and Arago, we actually see some distinctions as well. So Coos County actually has a higher educational attainment than Arago. So imagine if you were working in a nonprofit or any type of doing any type of work in Arago, and you wanted to maybe apply for a grant for an educational program. And maybe part of your argument was, you know, we really need to be building up the educational attainment of our youth or of our adults in our community. If you were to rely solely on Coos County data, you would be missing the actual reality of what's going on in Arago. Coos County would make it seem like educational attainment is a little bit higher than it actually is in that sub-county area. And so by drilling down to that sub-county level and providing Oregonians with that type of detailed data, we're able to help them more articulately and clearly make a case for whatever it is that they're trying to advocate for in their communities. So here's an example of a combined report. So I just combined Hood River County, Wasco County, and Sherman County to create a regional report. And here it shows you that you can name it, and it shows you exactly what geographies are contained there. And also, what our website does, which again is very unique and very powerful, is that it simultaneously on the fly calculates all of these statistics for you. So you generate a report, you don't have to worry about doing any of the math or pulling together all the statistics, we do it for you. So very easily you can create that regional report. There are some instances, however, when we can't combine the data because they're already calculated. And so just noting right there that for the percentage of children who enter school ready to learn, those are data that we can't actually combine. So each county in our region is displayed there separately. Also, another great function of our tool is that you can download the data into an Excel file that looks just like this, or you can print your data, and you have an option of whether you want to print the whole report or just your cluster, or download just the whole report or just your cluster. So that's the Community Reporter tool, which as you can see is quite a powerful tool. So in terms of the users and uses of the RCE, we've been live to the internet since 2008, but our user statistics go back to 2010. We know that we have, on average, about 4,000 people visit our site per month, and that we've had about 55,000 visits since October of 2010, so the last 2 years or so. Two and a half years. So who are our users? Well, generally, we have been meeting our mark. Our users tend to be nonprofit organizations, folks in local government, as well as a lot of engaged community residents. They're really interested in learning more about their community so they can make plans, work on programs or projects. Also, OSU Extension faculty and staff use our programs quite a bit. And people in the philanthropic as well as business sectors use the Rural Communities Explorer. And these are some of the ways that they report using it. For program planning is the majority, improving their personal understanding, preparing presentations, writing grants, doing business planning, et cetera. So we can really see that the impact of the Rural Communities Explorer has been marked and significant in the state. We understand that it saves people time in preparing grant applications and doing program planning. This is significant for folks as they're working on their jobs. They don't want to have to call the web for all this information we provided to them in one place so that they can ask deeper questions. It obviously also clearly contributes to the attainment of funding from grants by nonprofits as well as agencies. It also contributes to the receipt of loans for businesses, as well as helps folks do strategic business planning and manage their monetary and human resources. And also, the Rural Communities Explorer prompts people to think deeply, more deeply and differently about rural community issues, their community in general, and the state at large. And this is just one example that we wanted to kind of share with you about how data can be used to tell a story and how data and the RCE can be really useful for better understanding what's going on in our community. So this is just an example. If we wanted to better understand homelessness among youth in our community, one way that we could use the Rural Communities Explorer would be to start by exploring our reports and publications portals, so Scholars Archive as well as the library resources, to really understand what are some upstream causes of homelessness among youth. Doing that very short, quick research lit review would reveal that income and poverty are, of course, issues that are related to homelessness among youth, child abuse, unemployment, housing affordability, educational attainment, and crime are all issues that are associated with homelessness among youth. So once we get that understanding from the research, then we can actually start looking at the data within communities. So this is just one way that we think about organizing that story so we can actually pull the data and understand homelessness among youth. So we've got data associated with housing, associated with crime, and then associated with income and education. And all of these variables, all of this data is available from the Rural Communities Explorer on the reporter tool. So for example, let's look at educational attainment. So this is a chart of educational attainment from 1990 to 2007 to 2011, comparing Oregon to the small community of Drain in northern Douglas County. And so as we see here, the educational attainment in Oregon has gradually increased over time, though it seems to be leveling out over the last few years. But in Drain, we see a slightly different trend. Overall, there's a general decline in the percentage of adults with a four-year degree or greater. It's small, but there. So basically what we would do is use this information to add to our understanding of how does this contribute to potentially homelessness among youth. We would expect that a lower educational attainment, a community that has lower educational attainment, might be more at risk for having more prevalent homelessness among youth. So again, this provides us a sliver of information about that community. So what we want to do is generate more reports around all the rest of the data associated with homelessness among youth. So where is the Rural Communities Explorer headed at this point? Well, we have some new functionality that's going to be coming online shortly. We're adding the ability for users to compare their community to rural Oregon at large or urban Oregon at large. You can also generate a report looking at solely rural versus urban versus the state. And so this is a chart looking at rural median household income over time, which is the orange line, compared to other communities in the state, Tillamook County, Sutherland, and Grants Pass. And then we're also making improvements to the mapping tool, which we actually didn't share with you, but you saw a little bit of with the Oregon Explorer conversation, but making it possible for you to look at all of our variables, look at all of our characteristics, and map that across the state by county or by census tract. We're working on adding and creating more stories that you can tell with the data. And we're also working with the Oregon Community Foundation on a project called Tracking Oregon's Progress. And we will be adding indicators to the Rural Communities Explorer that pull from the benchmarks, as well as additional indicators that really tell the story about where Oregon is headed. We're also in partnership with Portland State University, their Greater Portland Pulse Project, which you might be familiar with. We're working on basically leveraging their ability to really understand the metro area and our ability to really clearly drill down at the rural community level and merge those two and really to provide Oregonians a better sense of what's going on in their communities at very specific scales for indicators that they care about. We also work with Oregon Department of Transportation on sharing data and providing them some ideas and insight into how to manage and store their data. And then we're also working with the nonprofit 211 Info, which is a call service for social service people who are in need of social services. And their data we're going to host to give us a gross estimate of social service demand and social service supply in communities across the state. So I'd just like to leave you now with a quote from one of our users, actually, who was struck so by the Rural Communities Explorer and was able to very clearly articulate the value of it. She says, "Numbers by themselves tell us nothing. Measurements taken over time give us information. Information understood in context is knowledge, and good decisions are based on knowledge, not just data. And so the Rural Communities Explorer not only provides that data and the information over time, but it also, because it's housed within the OSU system and the Oregon Explorer system, it provides that contextual information about how do we make sense of the data for our community-based decisions." So thank you very much for this opportunity. If you have any questions, please let us know.
Any questions for this group?
Lots of information.
There's a lot of information. And I didn't really realize this existed, so I'm happy. I don't know how many other people knew that it was there. You also do research, will do research with communities, correct?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So if they have information they want to figure out or dig deeper into their own communities.
Certainly, and we offer in-person trainings. We can connect with community members, and we can do a presentation, do basically a catered presentation for them that they want to understand more about income, or they want to understand more about economics, or they want to understand more about their population. We'll work with them to do a tailored presentation with them, or we can just sit down with them and do research, whatever makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And I saw one of the other videos was on risks in the environment. So, and one was fire. So you have the data that comes out from fire risks around the state. Does that change as we get more information during the fire season so that you can actually look at that grow?
Actually, we worked with the Oregon Department of Forestry and created a wildfire risk explorer. Okay. And the idea was to put all the community wildfire protection plans accessible. And one of the next steps really is to integrate sort of what's happening with the Rural Communities Explorer and the ability to report that information and do it in conjunction with all the other information that the agencies have. So I'd say we're still trying to, right now the integration is at the indicator level, but we're trying to integrate the plans with the reports and all of that. So.
And then some of the other agencies that report on fire data, we just don't always generate the data, as was mentioned. We harvest data from other services. So as those data are updated, we're actually able to bring them into any one of our portals.
Okay, any other questions for this group? We're going to get done.
Oh, it's going to be interesting. On my spare time, I get to go.
Hopefully it'll save you time.
Hopefully it will save you time.
Interesting, some of the comparisons you've made, I mean, I'm looking at I have a very long district, so it goes from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay. And understanding the differences between some of the communities and some of that stuff will be really important over time. And
indeed,
we've tried to gather that information. It's not easy to do.
As you know, exactly.
Including the population stuff. And yours is connected to the population data that they do at Portland State and others?
Yeah, we pull from their resources as well.
Mm-hmm. And the other question I had is if you are actually writing a grant or doing that kind of stuff, so the data that you use, say you pull it up and you bring data, so is it referenced back so they can actually reference the citing from which it came?
Indeed, so and we encourage that. You should cite the original source, but you can say pulled from the Rural Communities Explorer just to give us a little credit. But, indeed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for the time.
Thank you very much.
And we may be getting a hold of you for our economic conference we do on the coast, so we'll keep
in touch
with you.
Please do. Great.
And another Oregon State person put out a book called Towards One Oregon. It came up as a conversation that we've had in our deal before. Yes. So I got books for everyone here.
Wow. Well, thank you.
And I think it's worth reading. It's some other stuff that's been done by researchers up there, and I don't know anybody here was involved with it, but...
Not personally.
Okay. Yeah, but you know about the book.
Yes.
And I just wanted people, because I think what we're talking about in this committee has always been looking at how do we combine to become One Oregon. And I just want to say, since this is our last meeting, I want to thank the committee members for being a part of this and just say thank you to you. We're going to try to get together at least one more time afterwards, but... this has been a great committee for me, and it's been great for me to have you. And thanks for being the last presentation.
The last meeting. Yep.
Last meeting.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
So with that, we'll close our informational meeting.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Were you planning on having any other informational meetings?
Thank you. We do have two more get-togethers informationally. They're going to be joint, it looks like, on both of them. One will be... what we are now calling 101, Annexation 101, which is going to look at all that, what happens in annexation now, and are there ways that we can actually start maybe having a conversation with a group of people about how to simplify that process and maybe bring it down to a few instead of the many multitudes of things that we do. And I think we had enough opportunity here to find out that we had some issues with that, so it might be a nice conversation. And the other one... has to do with STEP program. We have had a couple of bills throughout the session, not in our committee, that had to do with STEP. The other one we're going to jointly do with the Representative Clem's committee in the House. The other one we're going to do with the Natural Resource Committee on STEP, and that's the salmon enhancement programs that have been around for a while. They started out with hatch boxes, and they've moved to other little issues. We have a big issue going up and down the coast with respect to the salmon management plans, and they're having conversations. And we have local people that want to come in and talk about what they're doing and why they think it's important. And I look forward to that presentation, too. And we will do those jointly with the other committee. So the one will be a week from Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. Is that the staff? Is it 2 weeks?
Mr. Chair, committee members, the one that we have hopefully scheduled, and we'll check with you on your schedules as well to make sure it works, is June 11th. That would be the STEP program. And then we're looking at doing the Annexation 101 during the week of the 17th of June. And so I'll touch base with your staff as well on that.
And out of that one, there may be a work group that continues during the interim to have decisions. We'll find out after we have that hearing if there's things that we think we can do. So with that, any other questions? Thank you for asking that question. And with that, I will say thank you, and we will adjourn our last official meeting of our committee in the sense that we can actually do work that can go on. But the other meetings will be informational as opposed to ones. And I thank everybody again. So
thank you.
We are adjourned. And you have a little more time. I should have said four.
Well, should have, but...